I'm Wendy Ring.
And I'm Brian Curtis. Welcome to Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up.
This show is a little bit of a mashup, part rerun from 2019 and part revisit in 2022 to find out what's happened since.
The story started back in 2007 when two 12-year-old boys came out of a movie theater and started a national movement.
Walter Lynn and his best friend Diego Morley had been to see An Inconvenient Truth. Anya Schulman, Walter's mom, explains what happened next.
They came back and said to their parents, "We have to do something." They were cynical Washington, D.C. teenagers, and they told us the government wasn't going to solve our problems and that we should go solar. And so we tried. It was really hard. It was expensive. It was confusing. I said to the kids, "Look, if we're going to go to all the work and expense to figure this out, we better have a bigger impact. Maybe we could get a group together in our neighborhood and bring down the price." So the two boys created these flyers, and they went door to door. In our neighborhood, it's row houses, two flights of stairs up to almost every front door. And after about the fifth door, I realized that this project wasn't being led by two 12-year-olds. We'd never make it. They went up and down all the stairs, dropped these flyers, and 2 weeks later, we had 50 homes sign up. We just started meeting in my living room and talking and bringing in experts and helping each other.
But after they figured out the technical stuff, they ran up against another barrier.
Putting solar on your roof and then saving money by making your own power seems like it should be something that anybody could do. And yet there are all kinds of barriers that make it hard for you to do that. You have to get permission from the utility if you want to get credit for the energy you produce. And in the case of DC, there was no way to get credit for your production. We had net metering, but we had no way to register. There was not even a procedure set up at our Public Service Commission. They were supposed to do it, but they weren't doing it. They were just paying a fine. So we had to pass a bill that required the utility to engage with rooftop solar.
To make the utilities change their behavior, the solar group wanted the fine doubled. They used that groundswell of enthusiasm for rooftop solar to exert pressure on the city council and change the law.
DC has 8 wards. We organized 8 buying groups, one in each ward, and then each group took one council member and educated them.
In addition, youth once again played a role in spurring their elders to action.
My son is more the scientist, the behind-the-scenes guy, and then Diego is the spokesperson. He was in the debate club in high school, and he was our chief lobbyist. And he's a dynamic 13, 14-year-old at that point, so he was our secret weapon. When he would go to the city council when there was a hearing, he would get standing ovations. And the council members would say, "Well, we want Diego to go first because I have to leave early." So it really was a high impact. The youth bring really important level of impatience to this issue.
Ah, the power of impatience.
Hey, don't we need it now?
But it also really mattered that there was a lot of people. Every single elected official in our council had constituents that cared about this issue and were talking to them about it and made it not a political issue, but an issue about making your constituents happy, something they want, something they should get. 2 years later, we'd passed a major piece of legislation in Washington, D.C., and we'd taken 45 houses solar together.
That was the beginning of Solar United Neighbors. A dozen years later, it's a national organization, and Anya is its executive director. Because going solar together is far easier than going it alone.
Walter and Diego had unleashed a hidden desire for solar.
All these people kept showing up and saying, "I've been wanting to do this for years. I just couldn't figure it out. And this is so exciting." And so from there, it's just literally been a contagion. You know, first we helped another neighborhood, then we helped another neighborhood, then we moved from DC to Maryland, and then to Virginia, then to West Virginia. And now we have on the ground organizing in DC, Maryland, Virginia, West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Minnesota, Arizona, Colorado, Texas, and Florida.
Once the barrier of going it alone is removed, enthusiasm for solar remains undiminished.
To this day, every time we meet a new group of people or start a bulk purchase in a new community, it's like new fuel on the fire. And people are like, this makes so much sense. We can save money. We can bring jobs to the community. So it's that continuous sort of feeding of energy and excitement that keeps propelling us forward.
Solar co-ops not only make going solar easier, they also make it more affordable.
Normally, a solar installer will be meeting and educating one household at a time, and that can cost them up to $3,000 or even $4,000 per sale. We're essentially finding and aggregating and educating a group of customers, maybe 30 or 80 or 100 customers. We do all that. So by having a group of customers, one installer can really give a very, very competitive price. We're seeing sometimes 25% less.
And that's on top of the federal tax credit, currently at 26%, but looking to be raised back to 30% in the near future. The early lessons learned in D.C. have helped Solar United Neighbors overcome barriers to solar in communities across the country.
It taught us that there's often a big difference between the rules that are written on the books versus how it really works in the real market. And it's really guided how we work, because what we do is we work on the barriers that we bump into, as opposed to starting from like an abstract point of view of what should the world look like. Instead, we're like, let's build solar. Oh, wait, this is in our way. Let's get rid of it. That's in our way. Let's get rid of it. And that's where we worked on dozens and dozens and dozens of state and local and even sometimes national pieces of policy. But it's all about what's in the way.
Solar United Neighbors' effectiveness also comes from combining their expertise as a national organization with local community groups on the ground. One great example is how Solar United Neighbors got to Florida.
I was driving home, listening to my local NPR station, and heard the story about Anya Schulman in Washington, D.C., and how she had come to start the solar co-op movement.
That's Mary DuBois in Orlando.
I was fascinated by her story, and I decided if she had managed to do this, why couldn't I? So I went to church the next week and just started talking about it. And I called up Anya. I wound up talking to somebody who was working for Anya in her living room because they didn't really have much of an office at that time. Her name is Emily, and we began a conversation, and ultimately we launched a solar co-op in Orlando. We had our first meeting at our church. And we had 50 people come, half were from the church, half were from the community. And that was the beginning. I knew nothing about solar. Anya's group was our technical experts, but we knew the community. We knew how to get the word out. And that combination was enough to get started.
Solar United Neighbors prepared a request for bids, and cooperative members met to choose a solar installer.
This happened to be in my living room, and Emily attended via Skype at the end of my dining room table and answered all the technical questions that people had that night. And after about 2.5 hours, our group settled on one installer. We got a great price. We got a pretty sophisticated installer.
48 solar systems were installed as a result of the project.
We had such a successful first go around that we started a second one even before we ended the first one.
And with two successes with long-distance collaboration, she asked if Solar United Neighbors could add Florida to the states where they had organizers on the ground. They said, sure.
They also said, you know, there's a price tag when you hire staff and you've got to give them travel budget and all that. I thought, oh dear, fundraising, not my favorite thing, but it's all for a good cause.
Now, Mary happened to belong to the League of Women Voters, and after one of their meetings, she did one of those, oh, by the ways.
As I was leaving, I said, Deidre, would you be interested in helping us do some fundraising for this new project? I was thinking wine and cheese for the neighbors in her neighborhood.
But Deidre was thinking bigger.
And she looked at me and she said, oh, this is a project for the League of Women Voters.
The League was born out of the women's suffrage movement after women won the vote to increase their involvement in civic affairs. Currently, that includes climate action. And in Florida, the League is the driving force organizing solar cooperatives in the state.
The League's politics are progressive, but solar is an issue which crosses political borders. It's a place where progressives and conservatives find common ground. That's why Anya believes that rooftop solar is key to expanding solar energy in this country.
90% of Americans support rooftop solar and want more solar.
There are lots of reasons other than climate change to want solar panels on your house.
We work in a lot of very conservative, very rural communities, and a lot of people in those communities are motivated by helping to rebuild the local economy, and they see this as a way to stop exporting dollars out of their community and instead build jobs in their community. We see people motivated by not wanting to have troops in the Middle East. They want to be energy independent, self-sufficiency. We see basically hating greedy monopoly utilities as a very broad bipartisan perspective. And so we kind of embrace all of that. And one of the things that's so fun about what we do in the states where we're organizing is we run a free solar education and training each year in each state. We call it our Solar Congress. And when people get together face to face, it's just an incredibly politically diverse group of people who don't agree on a lot of things, but they all agree that solar is awesome. And people learn how to respect each other and talk face to face. And just as long as we keep talking about solar, everybody gets along. And we love to have those kinds of conversations.
Take St. Johns County in Northeast Florida. It extends from the Atlantic coast and the city of St. Augustine on the east to the more rural area bordering the St. Johns River on the west. That's strongly Republican.
The further north you go in Florida, the more it becomes a part of the South. So it tends to be more conservative.
Warren Clark is a retired pastor and historical illustrator who organized the first solar co-op in St. Johns back in 2017.
We are very low to the sea here. We're the second most vulnerable city in Florida after Miami for sea level rise. When we had this new administration come in Washington, and we had all this rollback going on with Paris, it was like, okay, if we're going to be pulling out of all of these international accords, then what on earth can we do? Because they're not going to be doing it. What can we do here?
Putting solar panels on their home seemed like a logical first step.
But when we started having different companies come out, it was like, my gosh, how do you make a decision about this? We don't know enough about this.
So they were stymied until...
My wife and I went down to St. Petersburg, and we saw a sign down there that said something about the St. Petersburg Solar Cooperative. We said, wow, I wonder if we could do that in St. Johns County. By the time that I saw that sign, there had been a dozen solar cooperatives started around the state. So we knew that we were dealing with a group that knew how to do this.
Warren started with a core group of 8 people. They reached out to churches and environmental groups who invited their members to solar information meetings.
Just to whet people's appetite about it and to encourage them to sign up.
Then the St. Johns County Solar Cooperative opened its 3-month enrollment period.
We get the word out through press releases, next door notifications, all the ways we can do it, quite frankly, cheaply, but effectively. Of course, word of mouth is always the best. And as we grow members in the group, a lot of them are going to share with their neighbors, here, you might want to get in on this.
The most effective thing that we did was yard signs. Bright yellow with an image of the sun on it. We had 150 just scattered all around the county. That got a lot of response. We were wanting to get the 30, and I think we actually way overshot that. I think we were at 55 or 60. We had people that were pretty conservative. They just saw it as a good thing to do for the environment and made sense to them financially.
People who are interested fill in a simple form online.
They give their address and the type of rooftop they have. Next, they get their rooftop looked at by the people in D.C. who can do this remotely. It turns out people have been photographing our rooftops for years. I didn't know that until I got involved in this. They could determine this looks like a good candidate for solar because they've got a nice sunny rooftop. The orientation looks good. Or they may say, no, this does not look like a good candidate at all. Or they could say, we're not sure what is the situation. So that's a maybe group. And the well-qualified and the maybe groups are put right into the solar co-op list. And when we get up into the area of about 25, 30 members, then that's time for the Solar United Neighbors staff to send out the request for proposal.
Solar United Neighbors provided co-op members with a side-by-side comparison of all the bids.
What kind of materials would they be using? What the cost would be per square foot? And the one that we selected had really given a huge discount. It was like 30%. And the materials were going to be good quality. And though we weren't looking for this, they also were going to be American-made solar panels. We knew that they were credible because they had just installed the largest corporate installation in the state of Florida on the top of the new IKEA store in Jacksonville. So we knew they could do it.
By then, they had 112 members, but people just kept coming.
In the end, over 200 people in conservative St. Johns County signed up.
The installer begins immediately to start working through the list to present a customized proposal to each homeowner based on their rooftop, their bill, their goal.
Not everyone ended up getting panels.
Just because you signed up to be in the cooperative didn't mean that you were actually had to follow through and get the panels installed on your roof. You were just simply wanting to get a bid.
In the end, 49 co-op members chose to install solar panels.
The installations occurred one after another after another. And throughout the whole thing, Solar United Neighbors, they had our back. If anything was going wrong or needed to have some talking to with that installer, they were the ones who were going to get right in there and call them on it. And that happened a number of times, and those were good interventions. But it's both the expertise of Solar United Neighbors, knowing the in-the-weeds stuff about solar and being able to help local groups deal with that, and also the combination of us being the local organization that had the connections in the community. You have to have both in order for this thing to work.
Bringing people together in cooperatives not only helps them bring clean power into their homes, it also empowers them to fight for a rapid society-wide transition to clean energy.
When we have efforts by utilities to restrict solar, people that have been directly engaged in solar cooperatives now know what it is and are willing to write, willing to call, willing to go visit people who would say, we need to have this in our state. This is the kind of energy that we need to use in Florida.
And that's the difference between a solar buying club and a movement.
Our theory of change is go solar, join together, fight for your energy rights. And we really see it as a cycle that gets repeated over and over. And every time it gets repeated, more people can participate.
The buying groups may end once all the solar panels are installed, but that cycle of get solar, fight for your rights, and increase access carries on.
You know, in our mind, we sort of want to be the NRA of solar. We want to represent people all over the United States, a really huge movement, which is this idea of decentralized clean energy that's built for and by the community.
What would you say to people who argue that utility-scale solar farms are more efficient, cost-effective, and will get us to 100% clean energy faster than home rooftop panels?
If you only look at energy from an engineering perspective, from the perspective of a single investor, like you're a Wall Street investor, say, and you've got X to invest, you would definitely think that utility scale is the way to go because the per watt cost is less. And what those people are missing is three or four really important things. One, when you do rooftop solar, you have thousands of investors, not one investor. So you're bringing in money from everywhere, from the community, people reinvesting in their own community. So it's all sorts of new money going into a system. The second is that we're trying to build a completely different kind of grid in the future. Instead of having power plants outside the city and a bunch of long, inefficient wires coming into the city, the supply out there and the demand in here, we're trying to do a much more dynamic, much more efficient system where a lot of the supply is where the demand is. So you don't have the inefficiency of transmission. And then you have a dynamic system where you can start fluctuating the system. So you could have, oh, turn down your thermostat, plug your EV back into the grid and boost it up. So there's a whole new engineering mode coming to the grid, and people are grappling with a thousand different issues about how to make that work. But it's almost inevitable that we're going there, and homeowners actively educated and engaged are the key to success. And the way to get to those homeowners is rooftop solar. because that's what makes it fun. People who say you got to start with utility scale, from an academic point of view, in a perfect world with no inefficiency, without human nature, without laws, without politics, and without emotions, that's the way you would do it. But in a real world, in a complex system with complex politics and real people, you need the people to be bought in and involved in the new clean energy system. Otherwise, we're never going to get there.
Because utilities don't want to go there. In Florida, it's been a battle for solar to hold its ground.
The state's monopoly utilities have been trying to stop rooftop solar for years. Their target has been net metering, the policy that requires utilities to buy home-generated power at a fair price. In 2016, they tried a ballot initiative that would have changed the state constitution, but it went down in flames. In 2020, they tried the Public Utilities Commission, arguing that rich people with solar panels were shifting costs onto poor ratepayers.
With the utilities' own reports showing all solar customers aren't rich, with a third below area median income, the Utilities Commission preserved net metering. But in 2022, an anti-solar bill passed in the legislature.
Not surprising in a state with one utility lobbyist for every two legislators. But just because the bill passed, solar advocates didn't give up. A large, diverse coalition, including not only environmental groups, but also groups like Conservatives for Clean Energy and Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, fought back. Solar United Neighbors Florida members know what they're talking about and were ready and willing to speak up.
They mobilized to write letters to the editor, meet with their legislators, and rally at the Capitol.
With over 90% of Florida voters in favor of protecting net metering and a large display of public support, the governor had no choice but to veto the bill.
For Florida Power and Light, which wrote the bill, that came back to bite them in the derriere.
Over the last 18 months, rooftop solar in their service area doubled. Of course, that may also be due to their 18% rate hike.
But Florida is not the only place where rooftop solar is under attack.
We're having this fight everywhere. The Florida one was in Technicolor on the media and everywhere to see. But it is an organized, concerted effort. The trade associations that the utilities belong to have led a concerted deployment of this fake myth of this cost shift, and they've rolled it out over and over and over again.
Study after study in state after state have shown that at low levels of penetration, like in Florida, where there's less than 1% solar, the value of rooftop solar to utilities is greater than the retail price of electricity, because generating power close to where it's needed saves on transmission losses and decreases the need to use peaker plants and build new power plants.
So really, the cost shift goes the other way.
Besides mobilizing customers, which is, of course, what Solar United Neighbors does, there's a larger community of groups looking at utility accountability, utilities getting involved in elections.
Florida Power and Light, the state's largest utility, has tried to unseat elected officials friendly to solar with smear campaigns and even by running a candidate with the same last name.
I mean, it's reached a level of absurdity of how audacious utilities have become in this country. Utilities are given a franchise. It's a generous opportunity to have a monopoly in exchange for a compact with the community that they are supposed to serve and protect. And the utilities seem to have forgotten the compact. And so there really is a major recalibration going on across the political spectrum, with people pushing back and saying, whoa, if you're not going to do your job, safe, reliable, clean energy, then we're going to re-examine the whole system. And I think that's where we're headed.
One thing Solar United Neighbors advocates is separating the making and distributing of electricity.
We need a market where the people who generate have a fair and open market, whether you generate it on your roof or you generate it off the coast of somewhere.
The utility's job would be to deliver power and help with things like transitioning our buildings and vehicles to all electric.
You have to pick which side of the business you're on. You can't be selling to yourself.
Right now, when a utility builds a solar farm, they're allowed to pass the construction cost plus a profit margin on to ratepayers. When an individual puts up solar panels, The utilities can't do that.
They don't like solar, not because of cost shift or anything like that. It's because they also sell energy. So they don't want us making our own. So it's a conflict of interest.
The job description of utilities must change, so their incentives once again line up with the public interest. But they'll only go kicking and screaming. Wresting the power from these large, ruthless for-profit monopolies to change their role will require a broad social movement. Solar United Neighbors is laying that groundwork.
And so we really see this as a national nonpartisan. Everybody is included in this movement for fair, equitable transition to clean, resilient energy. It's a really broad movement that's picking up steam, and we feel it at Solar United Neighbors as thousands and thousands of people joining us every month.
Solar inequity does exist, but Anya says the answer is to expand access, not shut it down. And that means including renters.
Even though we started with single family rooftop solar, we quickly pivoted and added community solar for people who rent and who are in apartment buildings. And then we added the most ambitious low-income solar program in the country. That provides solar for every single low-income family in DC over the next 15 years. It's fully funded out of those fines that I mentioned in the beginning that the utility has to pay if we don't meet our solar targets. More than $20 million a year. And by 2030, every single low-income family in DC should have a 50% lower electric bill because of local solar that creates local jobs in the community.
The group also has a new set of 27 pilot projects this year, spread across the country, exploring other ways to bring solar to very low-income neighborhoods.
There's a history of people being abused by their utilities. Shutoffs at the end of the day on a Friday because you haven't paid your bill. So the first thing you have to do is build trust in the community, finding community partners and having those conversations and figuring out what's important to people first before you start talking about kilowatts.
So the cycle of get solar, fight for your energy rights, and expand access continues. So far, Solar United Neighbors has helped 349 co-ops install solar panels on over 7,000 homes, adding the equivalent of 13 utility-scale solar projects to the grid, all while building a bipartisan membership of over 300,000 solar advocates ready to keep fighting for a clean energy transition.
And just think, if it weren't for Walter and Diego, we'd all still be sitting on our thumbs.
Thanks, guys. An additional thanks to Anya Schulman, Mary DuBois, and Warren Clark.
And to Scott Holmes, Josh Woodward, and Audionautix for our music.
If you're inspired now to put solar on your roof and join the movement, but there's no co-op nearby, never fear. Solar United Neighbors also provides individual support to people going solar in all 50 states. Just go to solarunitedneighbors.org.